Welcome to another episode of Pat the Fat Man, where we like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Coming at you with the fifth installment of our showcase, massive, spectacular, deep dive of Ice Bridgerton tea. Heights. Wait. No.
Both of you neither just of those wrong. Things. Right. What the hell did yours come from? At least mine made sense.
Well, look, I thought this was a no judgment zone.
Oh, please. You really want me to go back through our entire history and find the number of times that you've judged me for the things that I've said on this podcast?
No.
All right, then. We could do another three podcasts on that alone.
I'm not thinking it's three, Bruce. I'm thinking one and a half, maybe.
I think you don't realize how much you judge me.
I mean, I'm just impressed that you think.
Right there.
All right. So we're talking about iced tea and its deliciousness and where to get it and the best kinds. You know, Lipton's not bad and all, but I prefer Jack Daniels.
I don't think Jack Daniels is a tea.
Moving on. Who's it that framed it? The Roger Rabbited.
Indeed.
Is what we're doing. Who framed Roger Rabbit? You know, interestingly enough, the two movies I've watched most recently have been Roger Rabbit and Rogue One, and both those start with R-O-G. And when you type them into Disney Plus, those are the two films that show up first. So, not related at all, but both very good films. And last we left our intrepid hero, Eddie the Valiant. Haha, see what they did there? Because it's not what I did there. It's what they did, if you hadn't realized it. He's valiant, right? Because he's looking out for the little guys. And we'll get more into that. Anyway, the worst
English lesson ever.
We do this every... We give English lessons every episode. It's not the worst. I've had worse. I've had bad English lessons. I'm sure I have. I don't know. Most of the English teachers I had in high school were not bad.
I wouldn't say they were bad, but I mean, the one example that I always remember is having to read Lord of the Flies. Mm-hmm. Boy, teacher really overanalyzed that book.
No. Oh. I had never read Lord of the Flies.
Really? Did they make you read Lord of the Flies? We went to the same school.
I think the year they gave us options and I did not pick Lord of the Flies.
No. Like we had to read it as a class.
Oh, okay. I get it. So in class. I don't know. You never know about those kind of things. I mean, it's even more like Wild West-ish even more, where you literally never know what books the children are going to be reading because it's entirely based on either the teacher's random whims or the school board's random whims or the continuous fight between those two people or two groups of people. So, you know, there are quote unquote classics that everybody reads, but there's not anymore. There are whole swaths of American children who are educated, who have never read what we all read through the course of school. Although most people read Lord of the Flies. I did not. I don't know how I escaped on that one, but I think we're talking about tunes.
Right. So framed Roger Rabbit. Now that we've come back to pack. Where we last left off, Eddie Valiant was driving into Toontown to rescue Roger Rabbit, who was kidnapped by Jessica Rabbit.
So he doesn't know that.
Well, no, he does, because when he was looking for Roger, he saw Jessica Rabbit's car drive off.
Yeah. So he thinks Jessica Rabbit killed R.K. Maroon.
Right. And kidnapped Roger.
He doesn't know that part. Because he says later on, when she says, where's Roger? It's like, oh, he checked out and left me at the
right
at the studio. So he doesn't actually know that. All he knows is his suspect for killing R.K. Maroon has just fled the scene. And he has to chase her down. And she drives into Toontown. Unbeknownst to us, she's actually chasing somebody else who also drove into Toontown, which is interesting. But it's a very interesting entrance. So Toontown, you know, we see Toontown entered in two ways through the course of this movie. This is the first way, which is through a very long tunnel, you know, with Felix the cat over it.
Two, actually. One smiley, one sad, like the theatrical, you know, thing with the masks.
Mm-hmm.
There's one above that's smiling and one below that's sad.
Yeah. And then the other way into Toontown is through a brick wall.
Right.
In the Acme factory.
But that was created by the weasels and the judge. There wasn't like a door or anything there. They drilled a hole into the wall.
Yeah, yeah. It does pose a question like, how do you get into Toontown? Like, how is this thing surrounded? Is there like a wall around the whole thing? Is there a bunch of hills? Is there like a...
I'd assume a wall around all of them, because earlier in the movie, we saw Yosemite Sam come over the wall
mm-hmm.
with his, you know, rear end on fire. And then, like we said here towards the end, they drill a hole.
That's a guess, though, but you got to figure this thing has some acreage to it.
Right.
From what the judge said. So walls ain't cheap, yo. So
that's Hollywood.
So I don't know. That's always been kind of an open question in my mind. Is there a way to just like wander into Toontown if you're coming from like the wrong direction in Hollywood? Or is the whole thing surrounded by walls or buildings at this point or whatever? And why is that tunnel so long?
Well, just like, you know, Roger Rabbit said that he couldn't do something unless it was funny. Maybe this was just the only way to get into Toontown is through, you know, something dramatic.
And honestly, that makes sense to me. The way Toontown is sort of played out and what we see, especially with the Toons through the course of this movie, that there would be some sort of catch to getting into Toontown. Like you couldn't just wander in or walk in even necessarily without having some sort of kitsch or gag or something about it where you go in. So in my mind, there's probably lots of different ways into Toontown, but they all lead to like different parts and they come from different parts of Hollywood. That's a different way to think about it. But, you know, I imagine there's different things that would get you into Toontown as long as you're quote unquote along for the ride.
Right.
Or that you're willing to sort of put in for the trope that you're going to buy into get into this Toontown. So Eddie's armed at this point with the Toon gun.
Yep.
The six shooter that's only got 5 bullets anymore because he sadly wasted the one bullet that was able to find its target
on the racist Indian bullet.
Yeah. Who destroyed a half-drunken bottle of whiskey, which is interestingly symbolic. No, given
it was empty. He emptied it out.
Oh yeah, that's right, he poured it out.
Yeah, he poured it out.
But you know, he has this racist epitaph to, you know, Indians, and then breaks a bottle of whiskey that he's just poured out because he's saying no to alcoholism, which is kind of another racist.
Right. Like, I don't know if they meant to be that deep into it, but it was easy to read that deep into it.
Right. Well, and truth be told, alcoholism is somewhat of an epidemic in the tribal nation. So it's kind of a very sad thing, but it's just interesting that that's the way they went with that.
Right. So he drives down the tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel is this bright red curtain, like a stage curtain. And as he approaches it, it lifts up and you see him driving through what is a cartoon countryside. Farmland and trees and birds, and they're all singing.
And the sun.
Smile, darn ya, smile.
Yeah. It's noon now. We've gone from the middle of the night to some point. Right? Before midnight. We know it's before, we know later on.
Oh, maybe that's why they're all crazy, is because the sun never sets. The
sun never sets, so they're just insane because they've been up, they've never slept.
They can't sleep.
Yeah, the sun never goes down because he's a smiley bastard. Singing along with the tune.
The sun's the leader of all of them. There's a car coming, wake up, you lousies.
There's a human coming.
One, two, three, you better be singing.
You better be singing or I'm scorching your A. It's like that sun in Mario, the angry sun.
Yeah, right.
I'll get you, bees. I like it better when he's the happy sun.
And so, you know, he's driving through the countryside and there's all these singing and dancing trees and animals and, you know. And at one point, 3 hummingbirds are flying right up to his car. Hi, Eddie, right in the front. And then in the side of the car, hi, Eddie. They get towards the back of the car. Hi, Eddie. And then they're in the very back of the car. And they're like, bye, Eddie. And then he runs into something.
Boom. It's funny because the scenery, like a drape falls down and everything just suddenly changes, right? Suddenly right. He's in the middle of the city, right? He's right. been driving through like country farmland with all these 1930s, 1940s era cartoon characters, basically, you know, that have been updated. At least the Disney ones have been updated kind of recently, to be honest, for a lot of the Disney material, but just basic cartoon stuff like the dancing trees and the dancing flowers and the three little pigs and that kind of thing. Suddenly you're in the city, which is also just full of random tune craziness. And it turns out the thing he's Eddie Valiant has crashed into is Acme's overused gags cart, which has a bunch of stuff.
He ran into Jessica Rabbit's car.
Oh, he did?
Yes, which that may have ran into, you know, a thing of, but yeah, he'd ran into Jessica Rabbit's car.
Okay.
Yeah, it says Acme overused gags.
Yep. And looking around the scene, everything is alive.
The buildings, everything. And there's like, you know, a crazy live like fire engine with somebody on the ladder going, tally-ho, you know.
Yeah, no idea where he's going. Running
around like crazy. All the buildings have faces and like some of them are leaning against the other, another one, you know, smiling all goofy like, and the one that's getting leaned on is all grumpy looking.
He's got a mustache and a beard. Got a
mustache. Like it's like you thought maybe that's where they got the idea for cars, because it's like buildings and Pixar presents buildings.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And that holds through the entire time that they're in Toontown. Almost everything is living.
Right.
In some way, shape or form, at least when you're in the more jokey sections of Toontown, all the buildings have eyes. I haven't actually looked that hard, but it would not surprise me if the streets also had eyes and faces. You know, basically everything's alive is what they're getting at here. You know, we're in Toontown now, which means we're outside of the real world or the regular world. And there's a question mark about how the Toon physics interact with real people who are there, because we know how real physics interacts with Toons when they're in the real world. And the answer is, like the tune is just sort of supersedes that.
But we do know how tune stuff interacts with real people because of Valiant's brother.
Correct. Our assumption going into this is that Valiant can die.
Right. And die easily.
Yeah. Like that has to be top of mind to Valiant because, you know, his brother died here. And on top of that, like, Toons are always doing stuff that would actually kill a real person to each other. A perfect
example is what happens next, which is when Eddie goes to check out Jessica Rabbit's car, he sticks his head into the window, and then when he sees that nothing's there, goes to pull it back out, and he hits his head on the roof.
Yeah.
And what happens, just from that little knock, he sees little birds pop out of their eggs, swirling around his head.
Yeah.
And that's just a little bump on the head.
That's a segue back to Roger, who, you know, when he got smashed with a refrigerator in the very opening scene of the show, produced birds instead of stars, as the script said, somehow created life by getting hit by a fridge in the same way that Eddie Valiant gets bump on the noggin from a car and also creates life. Powerful stuff.
No, we're not
quite
there.
As like life,
going there,
life creating as say Elsa, who makes a snowman come to life and nobody questions that. And then she does it again.
What happened to you?
like I've seen a lot of movies and I'm just picking apart some of the premises here.
Uh-huh. And the one that you're picking apart is Frozen.
She has the ability to give life. I mean, not just like little Tweety Bird either. Like, this guy has a full functioning brain and can reason and has some amount of moral capability.
You're a sick man. You're a sick man.
Like, and Olaf's a good person too. Like, anyways, so yeah, birds harken back to Mr. Rabbit. And that's after which Valiant spots his prey which at this point is Jessica Rabbit,
right?
Or who he thinks is Jessica Rabbit,
on like the top floor of a hotel from the window, you know, while he's standing on the ground. Mind you, it was easy to spot her because her window frame is the most is more ornate than the two next to it.
Yeah. Toontown is pointing him in that direction.
Right. And all you see is the silhouette, what you think is the silhouette of Jessica Rabbit.
You know, going into this, I feel like Toontown itself has a life of its own. Like it's all of these parts are, you know, parts and pieces of it are living. But I think Toontown is actually sort of directing the action, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like it knows that the following sequence is going to be funny. And then the sequence after that is going to be important for catching Doom. Like it, and it, I feel like Toontown kind of knows what the score is and knows what's going on, but it's got to get the gags out first. So we see Eddie next at an elevator.
If you actually look, the elevator button is kind of like a face and the button is the nose. But if you look behind Eddie, there's a suitcase with eyes and a nose and a mouth.
Oh, all the suitcases around him have eyes.
Yeah.
Like everything's alive. So
everything.
He pushes the button. And this elevator just drops in the very top, like it so much, everything kind of bounces around Eddie. And who more fitting would be behind the open door?
Be the elevator guy than Droopy.
Droopy the jerk.
Going up, sir. Now, this part I don't quite understand because, like, Eddie looks down at Droopy and then takes a step forward and falls because apparently the floor to the elevator is like 2 feet lower than the actual floor of the lobby.
Yep.
But he looked down to look at Droopy and he couldn't see that the floor was, I mean,
optical illusion.
I guess.
Yeah. Droopy is so. He's so like sarcastically good in this scene.
Well, he's just sarcastic in the way that you think he's sarcastic because like the way he talks is just so unengaged, you know, just like unfazed. Mm-hmm. You're like, mind your step, sir.
He is utterly screwing with Valiant through the entirety of this. Like, I don't know if I've seen another Droopy Dog cartoon in my life. So this is who Droopy Dog is to me.
Right.
This guy who will just screw with you if he can. He's just lurking around the corner to make you require a service of him so that he can just jerk your chain as hard as he can. Because it's not till after Valiant falls that he looks at Valiant and says,
mind your steps, sir.
This is the first inkling you get that maybe Toon physics is at work here. Because a fall to a person the size of Bob Hoskins in that scene of 2 feet, that could break some bones.
Oh, like, sure.
We're not talking something you're like easily getting up from a lot of the times, unless you know how to fall. And maybe he does.
We say this as, you know, newly 40 something year old that say on the regular, God, we're old.
Yeah. Falling from just, you know, standing can result in broken bones. Like the fact that he gets right up and dusts himself off, you get the feeling that maybe there's something a little more other than the norm going on here. And that's where we get confirmation per the next scene.
Droopy tells him to hold on as the doors are closing, then he pulls the lever and the elevator goes shooting up, so Eddie goes flat into the floor.
Yeah.
And then they get to the top floor, so Droopy pulls the lever back, and so Eddie goes flying to the roof and the spread open on the roof. Droopy looks up, your floor, sir. And doors open up and Eddie just kind of swings and falls off from the roof.
Yeah. When we say he went flat, it's not like he fell on his back and was flat against the ground. No, like he
squished,
compressed like a slinky.
Right.
Into the ground so that his.
Like into a puddle.
Yeah, like a puddle. And, you know, it was kind of trying to, you know, look at getting out of that situation, you know, trying to move and looking at Droopy Dog with a little bit of ire, and then, you know, springs upwards and slams into the top and then falls from there. Like all of this would kill a person. All of this. So we know there's a level of cartoon physics going on here. So the real question becomes, in a lot of people's minds, you know, why did Eddie's brother die? Right. He had a piano dropped on him.
Yes.
Marvin Acme had the safe dropped on him.
Right.
They both had the piano dropped on them because you got a grand piano. You can do that. You can hit more than one people with one of those. Not speaking from experience. And what? You give me that look.
You don't pay attention to me anyways. Keep going. Keep talking.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. Anyways, so his brother dies, right? And there's a question here. His brother dies. Eddie gets injured by that. So did that happen in the real world? We don't think so because it's the first bank of Toontown.
Yeah.
And he gets away with a billion simoleons.
Right.
So you figure this is in Toontown, but we just witnessed something that would have killed a normal person, right? If you puddleize somebody, they're not coming back from that. That's not a, it's not, well, a
this
thing,
may so. Be one of those situations where you just hit the I believe button.
I think it works on Toon physics.
Right.
Which is to say it was funny. So that's how it plays out.
Right.
Whereas the piano dropping on the head was not meant to be a gag. It was meant to be tragic.
Right. So there might be some metaphysics working on here.
Right. You know, anybody who's watched anime knows that not all cartoons are funny. Some of them are terrible. And that some of them go on for 400 episodes with shirtless guys yelling at each other while they're trying to power up.
Well, no, that's not what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of, you know, with the dog and Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
if you're somebody who wants, you know, people to say you're going straight to hell, dress up as that dog from Full Metal Alchemist, because, I mean, you're going straight to hell.
Straight to hell. Do not pass go.
Do not pass
go. Do not collect $200. You're going straight to hell. And I agree.
Yeah. Or, you know, well, it wasn't an anime, but Arturo and the horse from Neverending Story.
Well, that wasn't animated at all.
No, no, but I'm just saying that's another where someone, I've seen, you know, someone do that cosplay.
Oh, the horse?
Yes. like they're the kid and they carry, no kidding, they carry around like a stuffed horse head.
Oh my god.
And put it on the ground, you know? Shouldn't laugh at this, but I mean, you're just like, holy crap, that person's going to hell.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. That's right? A solid one right there. Yeah.
Even my fiance, who doesn't remember movies very much, remembers that one and has been traumatized.
Yeah, I mean, there was nobody that wasn't traumatized by Atreyu's loss of the horse. You know, right. it's just like everybody who's watched Full Metal Alchemist knows what we're talking about. We don't even have to say anything more about it.
Right.
We didn't even have to say dog. We could have just said like that super traumatizing yes. scene in Full Metal Alchemist and everybody would have understood. Yeah. And like which super traumatizing scene? Like, you know, the one at the beginning. You get to episode 4 and you realize this is not for children. This is not even for teens. This is jacked up.
This is jacked up.
Yeah.
This
is iced tea drinking show right here. You need to forget some things. But the liquor store guy, he knew.
All right. So we get to the top floor. And Droopy says, as he, you know, gets ready to leave, you know, have a good day, sir. And, you know, the elevator goes falling. And so Eddie finds the room and decides he's going to peek through the keyhole, because this is a cartoon world where keyholes are the size of, I don't know, big enough that you can see through. And so what he does actually see is a silhouette of what looks like Jessica Rabbit holding up lingerie. I don't know why she would be doing that, but sure, why not? And he's like, yeah, gotcha. So he kicks open the door and you see what you think is Jessica Rabbit start to peek over, you know, her long locks of red hair. And suddenly she turns very different. It's like, oh, man. And her face is just, I mean, just not pretty. It was not Jessica Rabbit.
It was made to be not a face you would want to see in that sudden moment.
It's not Jessica Rabbit at all.
Yeah, that's not Jessica Rabbit. It's not her at all. I was lied to. You lied to me, Toontown. You lied. And so we are introduced to Lena Hyena, who is man crazy.
Right.
Quite literally. Upon seeing Eddie Valiant exclaiming a man and then immediately running towards him with the kissy face.
Right.
Trying to kiss him.
And so he quickly slams the door shut and tries to run away. She ends up puncturing through the door with her lips and then also kicks down the door. And it's like, ooh, lover boy, it's Lena Hyena. So the nearest door is a bathroom door.
Men's room.
That's out of order. Well, there was something written on the wall here. So it's a bathroom door. And for a good time call, Alice Sin, quote, Wonderland, the best is yet to be.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right. And he's, you know, standing in this bathroom and turns around and he sees nothing but air. And he realizes, oh crap, and looks down and there's no floor. And just like cartoons, he's suspended in air for like 5 seconds. And he's like, oh no. Starts falling. Yeah. The hat stays while the rest of him falls. Then he ends up grabbing the hat, yep. Pulling it down on him. He ends up landing on a flagpole. And he's holding onto the flagpole with one hand. And on that flagpole is resting a bird nest with Tweety Bird in it. And so what does Tweety Bird do? He decides he's going to help out poor old Eddie there by counting off little piggies,
yep.
And removing his fingers from the pole one by one.
Yeah. And this is a bit taken directly from the Tweety Bird and Sylvester Cat cartoons, where Sylvester would invariably be hanging from something. And Tweety Bird would slowly pry his fingers off of the hanging thing one by one. Now, why he does this to Eddie Valiant, I don't know. You know, Tweety Bird actually had a legitimate grudge against Sylvester, who was always trying to eat him.
This is what cats do.
Yeah. So I guess this is what Tweety Birds do. They pull up your little fingers. And you know, it's funny because Valiant's like, oh, hey, Tweety. And then he starts doing his fingers. He's like, no. Don't do it.
Because he actually liked it. Seemed like, you know, that was a cartoon. He's like, oh, hey, you're cool. Yeah. You go, wait, what are you doing? No, stop.
You know, it's funny. You get this men's room out of order, right? And the reason it's out of order is because most of it has disappeared into space. And it does bring up a question mark. You don't see any more of this building in and around that area.
Right.
So you had to have had a men's room built into the open air effectively and that had then gotten destroyed for the most part. And then you put an out of order sign on it, but left it able to be opened because Toontown violated all of the OSHA regulations ever written ever with this bathroom into nowhere. So then Valiant is again plummeting to his doom. And lo and behold, we get two possible friends to rescue him.
Yeah, so we get Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny both skydiving. You can tell they're skydiving because they have goggles and parachutes on.
Yeah.
And of course, Bugs Bunny and just like, what's going on? He like, says, what's up, Doc? Skydiving without a parachute, kind of dangerous, don't you think? And Mickey's like, yeah, you can get killed. I don't know what possessed him to ask this question because you think he'd know better. Eddie says, hey, does one of you have a spare?
Well, I don't, but I think Bugs does.
Yeah. And Bugs like, yeah, but I don't think you're going to want it.
I don't think you're going to want it.
Mickey's like, oh, you better give it to him. All right. You asked for it. Here's the spare. And so he hands him a bag that says spare on the front. It's got a little tab and he pulls it. And what comes out is a spare tire.
White walled, old school timey car, Acme spare tire. Oh no! just more screaming.
Mickey's like, poor fella. And then Bugs like, yeah, ain't I a stinker?
So yet again, we have the Warner Brothers analog with the Disney on the screen at the same time, which they didn't do with Tweety Bird. So I'm assuming they had to pay a hefty fine for that fee or for that scene. But they did that with Bugs and Mickey.
So yeah, Eddie goes falling the rest of the way down, and before he hits the ground, he is caught by the man-obsessed Lena Hyena.
So normally this would kill both him and her and any pedestrians in the area, splashing blood across the street in a horrific display of terribleness. But instead, she just deftly picks him from the air, showcasing again metaphysical tune metaphysics.
Just killing the fun out of this movie. You're just killing it.
I'm not. I'm just showcasing the fact that, like, it's important because for the rest of the film, even though they go back into the real world, tune physics kind of hold. And it almost seems like the more Eddie plays into it, the more the tune physics hold on, even when he's in the real world. And the scene we get coming up with in the Acme warehouse with Doom, like, it's almost all tune physics going on in there for drama effect. So it's just interesting how this plays out in Toontown. As Eddie, even though he's a real world person who could theoretically die, his death can't be related to something of comedic value effectively. So Lena picks him out of the air and he goes tumbling off.
Well, she kisses him, and that's what sends him tumbling off, is the kiss, because it's so forceful that it knocked him away. When he gets up, he sees that she's charging down the middle of the street, right along the center line of the street, the white line in the middle of the road. So he gets up and starts pulling on the white line like it's a rope. It starts pulling on it and tearing it and then dragging it, and he sends the end of the line that he has in his hands right up where it just goes right into a wall. As Lena's charging, you hear she's charging like a train right at him, so she follows the line right into the wall.
Yep. Smash.
And he goes, tunes, gets him every time. And so she goes, flam. So like she was just following a train on a track, you know.
Because tunes.
And so at that point, Eddie's looking around and goes, huh, there's a dark alley. This must be where, you know, I need to go, because it's right here. And so as Eddie's stalking down the alleyway and passing through all these things, there are all the junk and garbage cans and whatnot, you get a side profile look and you can see Eddie's shadow up against the wall. As he's walking, he sneezes, and his shadow says, Gesundheit, and he says to the shadow, you know, thank you. At that point, the shadow puts his hands on his hips and stares at Eddie.
Yeah, not really sure where they were going with that, other than, like, the ridiculousness of the situation in general.
Well, just like in Peter Pan, remember Peter Pan's shadow tried to get away, so it had a mind of its own?
Yeah. And so, you know, at this point, Andy's drawn his gun, right? Because he's going down a dark alley.
Right.
So he has his gun drawn.
You see Jessica Rabbit holding a gun, looking at the camera. And she says, Valiant.
Yeah.
And he turns around and he sees a gun. She's got a gun pointed at him. And he goes, I knew I'd always get it in Toontown.
You see the silhouette of the gun, the long gun.
And the shadow of Doom.
Right. And so if you haven't seen this movie before, at this point in the movie, you don't know it's Doom, right? We do, because we've seen it. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it, but seriously, like, that's all we do here. It's old movies and we spoil them.
Well, it's like a 40-year-old movie at this point. Right,
yeah, so exactly. So
35.
What you've seen up to this point is a long-barreled gun killed R.K. Maroon.
Right.
You saw Jessica fleeing the scene. Eddie goes after her because he obviously thinks she's a suspect. He encounters her in the alleyway with the gun to him. So at this point, you think, okay, maybe this is it. He's found her. And that's when the gun creeping out from the side, the long pistol, clues you into there is somebody else. It's not Jessica Rabbit. There's somebody else. And, you know, she says behind you and then shoots. He gets out of the way. It knocks the gun out of what we find is Doom's hand. And Eddie, you know, forces her to drop her gun. And there's an interesting line where she says, what, you know, you still don't trust me? And he says,
I don't trust anybody or anything, not even, and then she goes, not even your own eyes.
That's an interesting standpoint, especially from Eddie's perspective. Likely once his brother was killed, he probably went into this world of I don't trust anybody or anything. And that
right.
will lead to alcoholism pretty quickly. If you've ever tried to live in a world where you don't trust anything or anyone, it's a pretty harsh world out there. And it's doubly harsh if everybody on the street is a stranger, right? There's that song, when you're strange, people come out in the rain. When you're strange, nobody remembers your name, right? If you listen to that song, it's all about, you know, for the most part, living a life where you're not friends with anybody. You don't trust anybody, right? And we've seen Valiant's sort of situation up to this point. His brother was probably his best friend. He is dead. His relationship with Dolores strained, kind of at each other's throats. We see them almost kiss, interrupted by Roger. So there's some repair going on there. But Valiant hasn't been living a very easy life, at least from a mental standpoint. You know, it's a throwaway line, but it really does characterize who Valiant is through the course of this movie and who he kind of grows out of being. Because if you watch a movie and you ask yourself, who's the movie about? The answer is whoever changed.
Right.
And it's a good movie. I got a caveat there. You know, there's plenty of movies where nobody changes. You know, Dumb and Dumber, fantastic movie. Nobody changes. Right.
there I are those from movies. TikTok, apparently Casino did not have a plot.
I could believe that. but the main character in a movie that's not just a flat out comedy or action movie, you know, in an actual drama, which this is the one who changes, and that's Eddie Valiant. And so this is sort of, you know, Eddie sort of showcasing at the word level who he is or has been since the death of his brother. You know, we've seen it in the form of action through the course of the show, but this is him sort of telling us. And then you get the second appearance of the bullets.
Right. Because, well, first she says, you know, he's like, you know, you still don't trust me, whatnot. And he's like, not even your own eyes. And that's the gun that killed R.K. Maroon. And Doom pulled the trigger. He's like, Doom.
That's right, coppers. You'll never catch me. He doesn't say coppers, but you'll never catch me.
Followed him to the studio, but I was too late to stop him. That's right. You'll never stop me. You're dead. You're all dead. And Valiant yells, Doom, and shoots three shots, so three of his bullets. Mind you, he had what, five?
Yeah, he had five. So I don't know why he stopped at three. I would have shot all five.
Right, because he still had one. So the three go down the alley and they stop at the corner. And one goes, which way did he go? The other one goes, I don't know. He went that away, pointing in the opposite direction.
Yeah, they go after him.
Right. And, you know, Valiant's like, dumb dubs, throws the gun. So he threw the gun with one bullet still in it.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny. As a kid, I actually felt sad for that bullet because I was like, oh, he never gets to like come out of the gun. He's stuck in there.
Never really realized that until now, because I was like, wait, there's the math here.
Well, it should be two, like as a six shooter, right?
Well, I thought there was only five.
Maybe there are only five. Either way, there's either one or two bullets left in that gun. That's still just laying in an alley in Toontown.
Two, three, four, five. No, you're right. There's two. There's six bullets. It was a six shooter.
So there's two sad bullets. Never get shot. And I always think to myself, if he shot the other two, maybe they would have gone the right direction. Like, just shoot the two afterwards. I even think I made up a scene in my mind where that's what happened. And Doom still gets away, but like the other two bullets go the right direction because he's like, dum-dums, and he shoots the other two.
Are you saying you Mandela effect yourself?
All the time. As far as I can tell, I have slipped possibly four realities at this point. This is one of them. And the funny part is it's none of the same Mandela stuff that everybody else does. Like I don't have the Mandela thing. Shazam, Kazam, whatever. You know, it was Shaquille O'Neal. We all know it. what's the other one? There's another one. There's another one I actually am part of. It's like toasted wheat or something like that. But either way, but there's some other ones that have to do with like family members with diseases, you know, in the reality I was from, they had gotten over them. In the reality I'm in now, they didn't and have since passed on. God rest her soul. Like it's concerning, Bruce. It really is a concerning factor in my life. Like sometimes I just stop and think that's not how things were for the last 40 years of my life, and now all of a sudden and everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, no, that, and I look back and I'm like, no, I never got that text. I thought I would have sworn up and down that I got that text, but it's not on my phone. So it's obviously I'm reality slipping. So I, you know, who knows how many of these podcasts I've actually done. And it's been the other Patrick Mason who has slipped into an alternate reality as well. I assume we're all the same level of zany, but, you know, I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, sometimes I believe I've done podcasts where I wasn't judged, but, you know, I get reminded.
It's because you're a slovenly bastard, Bruce. I judge you because I love you.
All right there, Ike Turner.
Like, I'm going to fill this sock full of sweet Valencia oranges. Oh, I think one of the realities I'm from, Ike Turner is not an actual person. But either way, I seem to be pretty unhinged in more ways than one. I know it's all shocking to you folks. So I'm going to take a nice, tall, cool sip of iced tea.
You know, what's the best part is, like, we're coming to the end of this hour, and I think we've only done 5 minutes of this.
Are you kidding me? We have no. We have got to have made it more than 5 minutes.
No. We started, like, right around 109, and it is currently at 114.
Oh, my gosh. We're getting slower. How? I thought we were actually moving pretty fast. Oh, my gosh. You know what? I'm not sorry, folks. I'm just not. This is what you've come to know and expect and somehow love. It's going to be funny. Our editor's going to point out that we spent like 10 minutes talking about the fact that we had only made 5 minutes into the movie. If you go on AI and ask, like, what is Pat and the Fat Man podcast about? It's like college sports. That's what it's about. And I'm like, it's what? it's like five episodes a year.
Never mind the 10 we're doing on this one movie.
Yeah, I know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's worth, you know, I think we did, what, 7 about Red Dawn.
Yeah.
I think that was a good number for Red Dawn. You know, so I think it's that level, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Definitely an underrated movie.
Yeah.
And that's probably because for us that grew up with this movie and we look back at it now, we're like, boy, we were way too young for this movie.
Yeah. How did our parents let us watch this?
Well, I have an excuse. I have divorced parents and a father that wanted to make sure that his kids loved him. So, you know, he tried to buy our love.
I think that's my same excuse, though. I think we're, remember, we were the two friends amongst our group of friends whose parents were divorced.
Divorced.
Yeah,
it's true. We were.
Everybody else's had intact families. We were the divorced kids. That's why we're so normal, folks. That's why we're so normal. Anyways, let's try and get through another minute of this film. Right.
So
we derail.
Here comes the childhood trauma.
Oh, you brought up trains. Here we go. Grandpa always used to play with his trains. It didn't matter what we did. That's all he cared about.
Okay, I'm gonna try to be the leader here. So, Johnny throws the gun away and says, "Dum-dums," and you know, just like, "Come on!" And they take off and then come right out, running out of the alley. And when they turn the corner, there's Jessica Rabbit's car. Jessica's like, "Oh no, where's Roger?" And Valiant's like, "Roger, he chickened out on me back at the studio." And she goes, "Oh no, he didn't. I hit him in the head with a frying pan and put him in the trunk so he wouldn't get hurt." He's like, "Makes perfect sense."
Makes perfect sense.
And the funniest part is when I first thought of that, I was like, "Well, yeah, it does make perfect sense because he would get hurt if he was just out there on his own." I went, "Oh, she had to hurt him to protect him from getting hurt." Yeah,
it works on both levels because it also still makes perfect sense because he's a tune,
right? Just he's like, "Well, we're obviously not going anywhere in my car. Let's take yours," and then he's like, "I think somebody already did." And he steps to the side and you look down the street and the whole street is just torn apart from, like, you know, a car going crazy. Jesse's like, oh, my honey bunny's never very good behind the wheel. And he's like, oh, so I guess he was a better lover than a driver. And he's like, you better believe it, Buster.
Yeah, it's from this point in which you realize that she loves him as much as he loves her.
Right. Like, it wasn't a put up. Like, she actually does love him.
Is a mutual loving marriage relationship between two toons who are not the same species. I don't even know how that works. I don't want to know how that works because I'm sure the internet rule 34 this about a million times and I don't want to see it.
Then stop talking about it.
Put your protection settings to safe.
So it's at that moment that the weasel mobile turns the corner and starts coming down at them from the far end of the road. Jessica's pulling Valiant, going, hey, we'll take Gingerbread Lane. We'll go this way. We'll go down Gingerbread Lane. And Eddie goes, no, Gingerbread Lane is this way. And in that moment, Benny, the taxi cab, pulls up. And he pulls up because when Valiant's saying this way, Gingerbread Lane is this way, he's pulling out his thumb.
Yep.
In the direction of Gingerbread Lane. And if you recall back, Benny says, if you ever need a ride, just stick out your thumb. And so kind of like a bat signal or, you know, some other signal for Superman, Benny appears because Eddie Valiant stuck out his thumb.
This is an interesting scene from an animation standpoint because Eddie actually grabs Jessica, right?
Right.
And so much like the times when Eddie grabs Roger in the real world, he's grabbing Jessica in the toon world. And so you can see there's actually a little bit of, I don't know, offness to the grab, how he handles her arm. Like, it's all animated fairly well, but it is a little bit janky. And that is something that's sort of prevalent throughout the entire Toontown experience, is that Bob Hoskins, you know, being a real world person, is a little janky now and again. Some of the things he does in and around Toontown, just like in some of the other scenes. But you got to remember, this is before CGI.
Right. Before the motion capture stuff.
Yeah. Green screen, yes. But the rest of it, no. And so, like, a lot of this is on the backs of, you know, what they did with Star Wars and especially the Battle of Hoth. And especially the next scene where we have Eddie driving the taxi.
Right.
Where they kind of shoot between. Well, and so something we didn't. Oh, my gosh, we're going to make this even longer. I'm sorry. But something we didn't cover on the drive into Toontown, which I think is important, is on the drive in. So we mentioned it's a really long tunnel. And one of the things that happens while he's driving is you see once he sees the curtain, the camera angle switches between looking at the curtains. Right. You're looking at the wheel, Eddie's hands through the glass in the car. And you're seeing the curtains, the first set of which are real, and the next sets are cartoons. But all he sees is the real one, and it's this big red dot at the far end, but he knows what it is. And the camera switches between that angle and his face.
Right.
And you see as it switches back and forth, his face is getting lit up redder and redder and redder. And it's not supposed to be anger. It's really fear. You can see it on his face,
right,
as he's going
in.
The tension that's built
up. Almost like he's afraid he's going to run into a wall or something, you know?
Yeah.
That's the impression I got at any rate.
It's this visceral fear of having to go back into Toontown.
Right.
Where his brother died, where the most traumatic experience of his life that has ruined, you know, from his perspective, ruined his life. He's having to go back into this because of this thing he's caught up with. And so it is the conclusion of the facing your fears portion of the heroic journey, right? He finally gets through the curtain, and then what is it but a bunch of singing and dancing trees and sun and you know, flowers, and everybody's happy to see him and telling him he should smile, right? It's this interesting, you know, very suspenseful setup they give you for entering Toontown that's just blown away by the fact that Toontown is what it is. And then sort of reinforced by the fact that Toon physics seem to be in effect until you get to the alleyway, when very likely Valiant could have died. So I just want to bring that up because it is a really well done cinema. I mean, the cinematography in the show is good pretty much all around, but
there was definitely an emotional effect in that, more so than I think in other parts of this movie.
Mm-hmm. You can tell the cinematography was done very purposefully
to invoke a certain feeling.
Right.
All right. So Benny shows up. Valiant gets in and Benny notices Jessica Rabbit is like, oh, hubba hubba, allow me, and opens the door and she gets
Mademoiselle.
In. And Mademoiselle. And they take off.
Oh, no, it's the weasels.
And suddenly they're down the tunnel coming out of Toontown. And Valiant's like, how long have you known it was Doom? And she goes, before poor Marvin Acme was killed, he confided in me that Doom wanted to get his hands on Toontown and he wouldn't stop at anything. And Valiant's like, oh, so he gave you the will? Jessica's like, well, I thought so, but it turned out to just be a blank piece of paper. And it's like, oh, a jokester to the end, huh? So Benny's like, well, where are we going to go?
The meter's running.
The meter's running. He's like, well, I have to go find my husband. I don't know what I'll do. I'm so worried about him. And Valiant goes, seriously, what do you see in that guy? And she goes, he makes me laugh.
He makes me laugh.
And all the while, the weasels are behind them, or at least we think the weasels were behind them, chasing them, you know, out of Toontown. But they come out of Toontown, and what's the next thing you see? Judge Doom standing at the exit with a barrel of dip, and he, you know, spills it all over the road, and it gets on Benny's wheels. He's like, oh, I've been dipped, and, you know, goes crashing into a light pole, yep, throwing Valiant and Jessica Rabbit from the vehicle. And it's at this point that you know, Judge Doom really turns more sinister, and it's like, nothing more treacherous than a slippery road. Yeah, and a crazy tune vehicle.
Yeah,
a maniacal tune vehicle.
Maniacal tune vehicle. We have our big reveal of who the actual villain of the story is. Who's the hand behind? And the
all hope is lost moment.
Correct. Because this is a Disney movie, so we have to have the all hope is lost moment. So Jessica and Mr. Valiant, Eddie the Valiant, are captured. They're... Steed has been downed. Roger Rabbit is missing. And they're captured into the clutches of the madman, Judge Doom. That's probably a wrap for this episode.
It's a good place to stop. Yes. You know, 7 minutes that we've traversed this whole thing.
It's better than five.
With all the scenery changes, you feel like you've been like across all of Toontown, you know?
Yeah.
From the country to the city, and then from the hotel down to the alleyway, and the alleyway led back to this. And
you know, it's like five rapid scene changes. It's very Star Wars worthy. It just constantly changes scenes every minute and a half.
Right.
It does feel like there's a lot packed into that. I'm not sure it'll be as jam-packed as the next 30 minutes or 20 minutes, as it were, 23 minutes. But we'll see. There's still a lot of film left that we can talk about. For all of our patrons out there, thank you so much for everything you do for us and for putting up with our shenanigans and for helping us to pay our editor. Shout out to both of our mothers, and Kelso, as well as Kyle, Mr. Kyle, and why did my name just blank? Mr. Jeremy, who are also patrons, and even Sancho, who's no longer a patron but used to be a patron. So thank you to all of you for your patronage. If you'd like to become a patron, you think maybe we made you laugh and might be worth a dollar, head to patthefatman.com and click on the Patreon button. We'll take you to Patreon, where you can become a patron. For $1 a month, you get access to all of our crazy shenanigans, which are on Patreon, where we do far less deep dives about stuff. And occasionally we post examples of that on our main feed, I believe. Farscape. I posted that a couple months ago. So if you want a taste of what's on the Patreon, but there's a lot more on there, we try and put at least one episode a month. We're going to start having merch for people who become patrons. So stay tuned for that. Check us out on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man, Instagram at Pat and the Fat Man, and on X at the Fat Man 1238. That's it for this episode of Pat the Fat Man. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Don't judge people.
not quite as like life creating as, say, Elsa, who makes a snowman come to life, and nobody questions that.
Oh, I never saw the movie because I'm a straight man.
Now, you need a caveat, straight man with no children. Because every straight man with children has not only seen the movie, but can sing all of the songs. We don't like to admit it, but we can sing all of them. You don't know. The cold never bothered me anyway, Bruce. Let it go. Stop. Just let it go. Stop. Don't mind. You got to go into the unknown here.
You start swinging. I swear to God, I'm getting up.
But is this what it feels like to be growing apart?
Ah, stop it. Stop it, you dead critter. When did I become
one who's always chasing your heart?
Stop.
Oh, he's going to die. He's going to die bad.
Oh.